This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Change is, to some extent, inevitable. Times change, places change, and people do too. Yet some changes occur to the clear detriment of one group with benefits to others and with long-lasting effects. That's the story of Clayton's Black community. Once strong and tight-knit, it was diminished to almost nothing by urban renewal policies that drove back Black families out during the 1950s and 60s. A downtown business district stands in the place where that community had thrived. And as of last month, an official historical marker stands there too, an acknowledgement of racial discrimination and a commemoration of those pushed out of a place called home by Black Claytonians for a long period of time. Here to talk with us about the marker, including what it means and how it came to be, we have Donna Rogers Beard, an historian and retired Clayton High School teacher. Hello.
Hello.
Also with us is Derek Novel, a former Clayton resident with memories of living in that past Black Clayton community. Hello to you too.
Good afternoon.
And welcome to you both to St. Louis on the Air. Derek, let's begin with you. You were at the unveiling ceremony last month.
Yes.
What was it like to see the city of Clayton recognize your family members and your history?
It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic, and I was glad that they did that.
Mm-hmm. And was this something that you'd been following for some time?
For a while, yes.
Mm-hmm.
My interest began with Donna beginning the research around Attucks School.
Mm-hmm, sure. And Donna, you have been researching Clayton's Black community for many years. You've been on the show in the past to talk about that. But it's not necessarily a broadly known story. What do you think this historical marker can do to help that?
I think it's going to do a lot. People, first of all, it's in a heavy foot traffic, and I think people will see it. And the fact that we've had the publicity in the paper and here on this show, more and more people are saying, oh, yeah, there was that Black community in Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first came here, people just looked at me like, are you kidding me? No, there are no Black people in Clayton. There were no Black people in Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
So that is slowly, slowly going away.
Mm-hmm.
People are understanding the history.
Right. Now, Derek, we spoke with your cousin, Adrian Rice.
Yes.
He did not live in Clayton, but his mother and aunts did. And he says history is easily erased or changed, and that the marker will preserve the stories of people like his family members and their accounts of what happened.
I would say that the big deal with the marker is that for years to come, for, you know, decades and centuries, you know, in the future when all of us are gone, some kid somewhere or some person that's living in Clayton at that time is going to walk past there, and they're going to know the history of the vibrant African American community that is no longer there and that was there. And that's important because to me, the stories and the memories of the people that I stand on their shoulders, they'll be heard.
And again, that was Adrian Rice, who was not a resident of Clayton, but his mother and aunts were residents of the Black community that was displaced. Now, Donna, let's talk a little bit about that history. The story of Clayton's Black community starts way back in the 1880s. In those early days and through, you know, like 50, 60 years to the 1940s, what was that community like?
It was a small community, and we're talking about Carondelet, Bonham, that goes all from Hanley to Brentwood. And it's a tightly knit community, small, modest housing.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the people who lived there were related to each other by marriage, by blood. Most of them went to the same church,
mm-hmm.
Which was at Brentwood,
Boulevard,
across from the Shaw Park. And so it was a community, and then also you have the school there, and people have such incredible fond memories of growing up there.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of jobs did the residents of the community have?
Yeah, there were a couple who lived, who worked in the cement business, and there were people who worked at City Hall as mm-hmm. custodians, janitors. There was a guy by the name of Bailey mm-hmm. who was often in the Post-Dispatch. He was quite a colorful character.
Okay.
there were teachers. Mm-hmm. There was a guy who worked at City Hall as a clerk. So there were a variety of occupations. There were domestic workers.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that variety of
right,
workers.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Derek, how is it that your family came to live in Clayton?
My grandfather, who was a farmer, who actually lived in Creve Coeur,
mm-hmm.
had bought parcels of land all over St. Louis County. How he did it, I don't know,
okay.
but he was able to do that.
Right, right.
And two of the parcels that he owned on Hanley Road mm-hmm. was number 119, our next door neighbor, and we lived at 121.
Okay.
He rented that property to my father, and I think that began around about maybe 1946. So we have about a 60-year history here in Clayton,
wow.
dating back from that.
Mm-hmm. And was there other family that also lived around there?
On Bonham, which is right next door, if you will, next street to from Hanley Road, are my aunt Anna. That's my father's sister and her family lived on Bonham, mm-hmm. up the street from us.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to grow up in Clayton in the 1950s? Like, what is it that you remember most vividly about your childhood there?
At the corner of Hanley and Bonham, if you walked across the street, and because I was so young, I'd have to have one of my siblings walk across the street with me, there was a small grocery store that I believe was owned by the McKays, if I remember correctly. It's not like the neighborhood stores that you find in a lot of neighborhoods, whether you don't find a Schnucks or something of that nature, but that kind of thing. You could go across the street, and that was a store where you could buy bread by the slice.
Oh, really?
Yes, I remember that very vividly.
Okay.
And you could buy I didn't smoke, but you could buy cigarettes one at a time kind of thing.
Okay.
So they did the kinds of things to accommodate the community.
Right, right. So you'd also talked about the school. Yeah. Attic School.
Right across the street from where we lived was Attic School.
Mm-hmm.
It was torn down in 1954 after the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education decision.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a toddler, so I don't have an experience with a school. That might have been my brother and sister, because it's right across the street. It's a convenient place to go to school.
Right, okay. Right. And Donna, you're a retired high school teacher. Mm-hmm. Was school how you learned about the Attic School and how you came to get that curiosity piqued?
Yeah, I moved here to St. Louis in 1969, to mm-hmm. University City. And we'd go down Hanley. And at that time, there was a tropical Tropicana kind of restaurant. And people would say, you know, that it was the colored school. Colored school?
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was teaching in University City. And I became curious about what was there, where did the people live
mm-hmm.
who sent children to this colored school called Crispus Attucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started teaching in Clayton in 1990 and became very much involved in just doing the research about the community as if ancestors were calling me. I really feel that way.
And in the course of that research, I mean, you were able to learn what the community, the Black community in Clayton was like. And by the 1940s, there were nearly 500
yeah.
Black mm-hmm. community members mm-hmm. there. How did the community change over time, and how long did that change take?
Yeah, from 1950, To about 1961. So we're talking about a period of 11 years. That's where the great change happens. Mm-hmm. You have an economic boom after World War II. And I found an interesting quote in Dixon Terry's book, which is the book about Clayton, in which they said, "It's been called a bedroom town and it's long been considered a good place to live if you can find a place to live. Surveys have shown that Clayton has essentially filled up since 1950. So Famous Bar has moved in, and Brown Shoe Company is soon to move in. And so Clayton has become this booming community, but locked in, landlocked. And so they begin to look at the most vulnerable population, the cheapest property, and rezoning. 1952, you have rezoning in which that residential property we talked about between Hanley and Brentwood, is rezoned as commercial.
Right.
And it's also interesting, it was an integrated community. There were white people living in that area who were also displaced.
Right. You're nodding, Derek.
I remember playing with a white boy when I was like about 5 years old in that area. So I couldn't tell you exactly where he lived, but I remember playing with him. I don't even remember his name, but I recall that. So,
right.
And I believe they lived in Carondelet. We lived at which is the street over from Bonham.
So when we talk about discrimination as being a thing that pushed people out, I think sometimes it's easy to think of push as being like a single thing, but it happens over time.
Gradual.
What are some of the specific incidents or incidences that stood out in the research that you've done, Donna, that demonstrates like what it was really like in the experience of everyday people?
Yeah, it is a gradual thing that begins about the 1950s, and you see evidence of properties being bought up, and then there's some protests from especially the white members of the community. And then there is more protests, more people who are leaving the community. But by 1961, it's over. And the black church, which was the fourth oldest church in Clayton, holds its final service in October of 1961. And basically what happens is the doors just shut. And the history is erased of that community.
Right. We're talking about Clayton's Black community and a new marker that commemorates that history. We're speaking with Donna Rogers Beard, an historian and retired Clayton High School teacher, and Derek Novel, a former Clayton resident who has his own memories of living in that past Black Clayton community. So we heard from Adrian Rice earlier, Derek,
yes,
your cousin. Now, Adrian gave a presentation about his family's history during the unveiling ceremony for the marker last month. He's also been collecting photos from his family and putting them into a collage book to preserve their stories.
I think that the people that lived in Clayton, they were just like everybody else, right? You know, they were working and they were living their lives and they had families and they were going to school and, you know, aunts that went to college. My mom went to college after that. There was a community there. And I think a lot of times people say, oh, well, you know, what's going on with certain communities and why can't certain communities do this, that, and the other? And the history shows that people were living. People were doing doing well. And due to the economic and the racism of the times, that was destroyed.
And that was Adrian Rice, who was speaking about the efforts that he's making to preserve the stories of his family who lived in Clayton. Derek, as you hear your cousin speak, you were young at the time these changes over that 11 or so year period where things are really changing quickly. What do you remember, you know, seeing or maybe feeling throughout your childhood in the 50s and 60s while all this was going on?
Well, it was a situation that my parents never really talked about as that was going on. They just simply responded to the the requirements of the time. So the house that we lived in on 121 South Hanley, my grandfather sold that house, and it became a Cadillac dealership. Anybody in my age range who knows Clayton would remember that dealership.
Okay.
And then from there, we moved up the street to Bonham, 7747. I don't know if my grandfather also owned that land or not, but my father finally got a letter that told him that he had to be moved out of there by the end of January 1958. Mm-hmm. We moved out of Hanley Road in the summer of 1956, so that's a quick change, if you will. And that house in Bonham became the 7777 building in Clayton, an office building and a restaurant at the top, which no longer is in operation.
Right.
So that kind of thing was going on during that time period. My parents gave us options in terms of where we would go to school. So my brother decided that he did not want to go to Clayton schools. He decided that he wanted to go to the city. So he went to an elementary school called Benton in the city. And from there, he graduated from Soldan High School.
Mm-hmm.
My sister decided that she wanted to attend a school in Clayton. So she went to Merrimack Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
She went to Belleville, which was a seventh grade center at the time. She went to White Island High School. She graduated from Clayton High School in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what she went through, I don't know. But by the time of 1964, which is after that 61 period,
right. She
was the only African-American in that graduating class. So if that would have been the normal progression, if you still lived in Clayton, then obviously she was alone in that progression.
Right. All the details that you're mentioning, Derek, are so, they give this texture, mm-hmm. I think, to the history, because there is what people see now,
mm-hmm.
and then you're describing what was there, and that without your sharing like this, or maybe this historical marker going up, but we might not know about this in the same way. Now, the Black community was located in historic Clayton because of restrictive covenants that prohibited residents elsewhere. How was it that the city of Clayton rezoned? Donna, you mentioned rezoning earlier.
Mm-hmm.
How did they rezone to create that business district? I mean, what was that process like?
From what I understand, it's a meeting with city government that says this is what we're going to do. And there were other changes being made, 1958, when you talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Clayton made the decision to go to five-story buildings. Maximum had been two stories before that time. So Clayton's responding to the economic progress that's going on. And I would say, when you talked about restricted covenants, when Black people first came to Clayton, I don't even think there was a concern for restricted covenants. They were in the old town.
Mm-hmm.
They are buying property from the Hanleys. So we're talking about they're there at the very, very beginning. And then as the city develops, and Davis Place and things like that, then you get the restricted covenants. But in the very, very beginning, it was, do you have the money to buy the land?
Right. The marker itself and the wording that is on it, Donna, you were involved in the planning around that. How did you and the task force decide what should go on that marker?
Yeah. The whole idea of a thriving community, and there was quite a bit of discussion about that. And there was some backlash as people talked about, how can you say that was a thriving community when, how do you define thriving? Where were the businesses? How much money did people make? How much was that property worth? And we stuck to that term, thriving community, because it was thriving as a community in that it was so incredibly connected to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The institutions, the church was there. There was a baseball team in the 1920s. The first postmaster of Clayton was a Black man.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly a community when you look at what's going on in the rest of the country, where people assume Black people left the rural areas to the very urban areas without that step in between. Small towns where they're looking for safe, attractive places for their children to go to school. And even in 1880, when you had a population in the school, 48 students, three of them black, Clayton was known for its good school district. And black parents, black students, their former students, talk about what a wonderful school they attended and what a nurturing community. That, to me, is thriving.
Mm-hmm. As we close here, you know, markers like the one that stands now in Clayton, they're a physical and tangible means of recognizing an historical fact. And in this case, it's the city of Clayton officially acknowledging its role in displacing a group of people because of race. Do you feel this marker, Derek, is a step toward accountability for the city's role?
Oh, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
And what would be sort of the step beyond a marker?
Oh, that's a good question. And I would say if you could do that is to provide affordable housing in Clayton.
Affordable housing?
Yeah, that would be the next step. Because if you want to diversify the population, if you have an opportunity for people to come in, it would be in terms of having more affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
But when they did the Ritz-Carlton complex, they destroyed a lot of housing up and down Carondelet at that time. And those were actually white families for the most part that were living on that street. I'm talking about the 1970s, I guess.
Right.
70s at that time.
And Donna, as we wrap the last minute here, what is it that would come next?
I would agree. Affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's tearing down and building the mansions.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about diversity, but not doing what's necessary for diversity.
Mm-hmm. Donna Rogers Beard is an historian and retired Clayton High School teacher, and Derek Novel is a former Clayton resident who lived in the black community that was displaced in the 1950s and 60s.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuziz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.